Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Breitall. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 158 for comics originally released on August 18th, 2010. Now, starting us off in DC is Ex Machina number 50 from Wildstorm. This is the final issue of that series. Now, before we talk about this issue in particular, let's talk just a little about this series, because I think it's kind of been a very unique series, and one I'm going to be sorry to see go, because it's had a very kind of political bent to it, and not in a necessarily pushing any certain political viewpoint, but taking political issues, bringing them up front and center, and really kind of examining them from all sides, and giving a good discussion about some of those issues. Which, I really enjoyed that aspect of the series. The other thing that I thought made the series unique was it was essentially a period piece set in the aftermath of 9/11. And in New York specifically, of course, because it's centering on, you know, the guy who becomes the mayor of New York. And, you know, typically when we think period piece, we think, you know, World War II or some other really historical period versus something really a lot more modern and closer to home.
Yeah, so the whole series actually takes place mostly between 2001 and 2005. And then in this issue, we get a little bit of 2006 and 2007 as kind of an epilogue.
And this issue really did feel like an epilogue to the series, and in some ways good, in some ways not bad, but it felt different than a lot of the rest of the series.
Well, I kind of went back and forth on this one. I mean, it was well written throughout.
Yes.
But and Tony Harris's art is gorgeous as always. I mean, he's just an amazing. In fact, Janine was looking over my shoulder when I was reading this issue. And she's like, wow, the art is, like, so different in some comic books. She's like, it's like every panel is painted. You know, she just, you know, just immediately noticed the difference between, you know, kind of a standard superhero comic, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
But this issue, while it was written really good, I found myself liking it and disliking it, you know, several times as I read through this issue. Just from the way the story turned. And it has nothing to do with the quality of the writing. It's just, you know, my reaction to what Vaughn was writing.
Exactly, because I thought it made the lead character of Mitchell Hundred, frankly, a lot less likable in places.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
I mean, there were a couple of plot points at the end that really didn't work for me in terms of making me like either of the characters involved, almost, you know?
Right, and it's just, and they were building to it with Kremlin, but, you know, just some of this, and, you know, this Bradbury thing came out of left field, and I know at the beginning, you know, and it's funny because, you know, it opens up with Mitchell Hundred essentially saying that there's no such thing as a happy ending, there's only a happy pause. That, you know, when things end, it's usually, if you follow the story to a conclusion, you know, you get regret, pain, and loss. And that's how I feel at the end of this one. It certainly was not an uplifting ending to the series, you know, for me. And I loved the series in general. I mean, series was, you know, 5 out of 5, hands down. And this issue was a 5 out of 5 for me. It's just, you know, I can enjoy something and not like how it went. You know what I mean? It's just, it was very, I could see Mitchell doing these things, especially since the last story is called Vice, you know, and there's a double meaning to that, actually, it seems. But it just, some of the things that went on, like you said, which I don't want to spoil the issue, but it's just, I just didn't like the character arc turns.
I guess for me, it's not only did I not like them, I felt certain things didn't necessarily flow from what we came before. So things almost felt a little out of character, you know. And again, it was very well executed as a story. It just felt enough almost detached from what had come before that it felt more like an epilogue to the series than kind of a grand wrap-up and whatnot, which is,
Well,
I guess, a fine line of distinction, but.
you mentioned the political thing, and I think just to kind of put a cherry on top of the series, it seemed to me like Vaughn was really making his final statement that to be successful in politics, you've got to be kind of a and he's just kind of taking that final turn on Hundred's story arc. That he's been trying to do the right thing as mayor of New York, and as he moves on to more national level politics, he kind of becomes a scumbag. You know, and it just seems like that's Brian K. Vaughan's opinion of people who are at that level of politics. And for Mitchell to move to that level of politics, you know, because you have a couple of years that pass there in that last part of the thing, and I don't think you're seeing the fully fleshed out transformation. It seems kind of fast, maybe, but I think that's just what he's kind of wrapping it as. You know, these couple of years pass, you didn't see all the details, but in order to get where he wanted to get politically, he did transform. His personality did transform, and he went from being the really nice guy, crusader, you know, all this kind of stuff, to being someone who is not so nice. And that's what Kremlin, I think, was fearing. That's why Kremlin wanted him to go back to being the great machine and not being a politician. And he's like, no, I could be a politician. I could do all these great things. Well, there's compromises that get made.
Yeah, I guess enough of that transformation happened off screen, and we just see the ramifications of it, and not even necessarily enough of the highlights of that transformation, that dropped this issue to me down to a 4, whereas typically this series was, I think, you know, a top-notch series. Certainly, it's one that I recommend people read, you know, if they're looking for anything, again, that's a bit more of a cerebral comic. Because there are a lot of issues dealt with in this series, and I think dealt with fairly and interestingly, with a good backdrop of action and adventure as well. So I like this. It again felt enough different than the rest of the series, and not in a good way.
Well, I can forgive him not going into detail on it because where he was bringing the character, I don't know if I would have wanted to read the detail of his decline into the personality that he has on the last page.
And that's fair. That's fair.
I mean, I saw, like you said, it happened a lot of it off panel, and I could suss out why it happened. I just wouldn't have wanted to read another 3 or 4 issues detailing that personality transformation.
Yeah, it's just, again, the character that Mitchell Hundred is at the end of this is so radically different in certain respects from where he was previously. That, you know, again, it didn't work for me. It made a certain amount of sense, and you know, I agree with what you're saying of the transformation, etc., but to me it wasn't the kind of strong ending I would have liked to have seen. And I didn't have any particular expectations for this issue, but certainly the direction it went in was not something I had expected. Anyways, good series. I thought this was a good issue. I didn't think it was one of the highlights of the series, but again, it's been such a thought-provoking series throughout, that, you know, it does have a good sense of closure and finality to it, so it's not like the series just peters out at the end. It may not go in a direction I necessarily cared for, but it did go somewhere, and definitively so. So for me, that gives a you know, a thumbs up for the whole series in that respect. 'Cause there's some where the payoff just really stinks, this. Well, again, while I didn't like it, I didn't think that was the case. It had payoff. And this, again, is something that I would recommend people go either check out the trades or the back issues and read this stuff. It's good writing and some of, I think, Vaughn's best work.
Yeah, and again, I think it really, it seems to me to just underscore some of Vaughn's opinions about politics and kind of ties it up in a bow at the end. So, you know, that's just how I took that ending. And it'd be interesting at some point after, you know, anyone who ever wants to get on Skype and have an actual spoiler-filled discussion about this after they've read it, it would be interesting because there are certain things that I would say about it that I don't want to say right now to ruin it for people who have not read the series yet. And move on. We've got another ending in our Marvel book, the Hulk number 24, the final chapter of World War Hulks and the conclusion for now of the Red Hulk story.
Now, the cover for this is a wraparound cover where we've got the Green Hulk and the Red Hulk fighting. So, you know, I'm sitting here with my notes. First thing I do is I put a statement at the beginning, Hulk versus Red Hulk, question mark. Because there have been so many times they promise stuff and don't deliver. I think they delivered on the showdown between the two Hulks, and I thought it was pretty good.
No, I agree. And there are parts of this whole World War Hulks that I liked a lot more than other parts. I mean, I really liked the intelligentsia that got brought in. I didn't care at all for this digression into hulked out heroes. I thought that was really needless and kind of stupid.
I think overall you're right. I mean, the World War Hulks was a good storyline, but it went on too long, and like you said, it had some major digressions. I think the core of the storyline, as told in Hulk and Incredible Hulk, was pretty solid. A lot of the stuff that happened on the sides, particularly the hulked out heroes, two issue, you know, miniseries things, were completely superfluous. I thought they were entertaining, but they were such side stories that didn't need to be told, as to, you know, kind of taint the overall experience of World War Hulks to a degree. But if you stick to the core stuff, it was pretty good. I think they just tried to milk it for too much.
Yeah, and then, you know, I think the reveal on the Red Hulk, people who are reading it in trades, it would be kind of a spoiler, I guess. But I mean, that seemed to be Loeb just trying to be clever, you know, the way he.
I'll agree with that. What I will say on that is the twist they put on who the Red Hulk is, or, you know, the twist they put on this at the end of this issue, I thought was really good.
I really enjoyed the story arc in this issue. Now, that said, the style that Loeb chose to use, which is these, they're talking as they're fighting, and there is this running commentary of Red Hulk's internal thought monologue and Green Hulk, his internal monologue, and it's back and forth, and you're reading essentially three parallel threads was just really distracting to me, and it didn't work for me.
I can see that because there were a couple of places where he was very much trying to draw the parallels between the Hulk and the Red Hulk in those captions. And again, having those three threads to follow throughout the whole thing, yeah, I don't think it really added to the story. I see what he was trying to do.
Yeah, I mean, I got it. I just didn't need to have him beat me over the head with it for, you know, 15 pages or whatever.
Yeah. I thought this had some really good action. The thing that kind of bothered me is there were a couple of characters where I almost didn't notice them coming on stage and going off stage. Particularly when the She-Hulks start fighting and the newest She-Hulk comes on and she's out there in the background or whatever. And until she gets mentioned by name, it's like I had missed that she'd even been there because she only shows up in the corner of, you know, one panel or whatever. So I think the art could have been a little clearer there for some of that. But I mean, there's so many Hulks in this issue, it's not even funny. We got Hulk, Red Hulk, She-Hulk, Red She-Hulk, A-Bomb, this new Savage She-Hulk or whatever. I mean, there's enough gamma radiation here to, irradiate a large town or whatever. The one exit of characters that didn't happen on screen was the intelligentsia. We see them basically, knocking off the US Treasury and stealing all kinds of stuff. The fight wanders a little too close, and then did they make it out? Did they not make it out? What the heck happened there?
Well, I'm assuming they made it away. It's like, hey, we got lots of money now. Woo!
I kind of figure they did too, 'cause I mean it'd be kind of silly to just bring them on and maybe have killed them off screen, but not definitively so. I mean, what would be the point in that? It just goes towards there are aspects of the storytelling that could have, and I think should have been a little bit clearer. Because it was a good story. It's just, again, around the edges, there are a few things that, maybe they shouldn't have gone with quite so many splash pages and spent a few panels clarifying a few other things.
Yeah, and I think Ed McGuinness could have used some photo reference on the interior of the Lincoln Memorial.
Yeah, well, details, details. I agree, though, because it also seemed like they were just all over the place in a few of these fights. I mean, covering, it seemed like major ground, but anyways.
Well, I mean, it's like Hulk smacks Red Hulk and has him fly from the really it was the mint that they were in, right? And
It was the U.S. Treasury. The engraving and printing department, so I am not up enough on my
yeah, it's
Washington, D.C.
I don't think it's called the
geography.
Treasury. It's probably the Bureau of Engraving and Printing. It's down the street from the Lincoln Memorial and actually not in the direction that this vector would have had him hitting the Lincoln Memorial if he was hit there from the Bureau of Printing and Engraving. But if he hits it like he did and it smashes these columns to either side of Lincoln, it would have smashed up Lincoln too. And the statue's just all out of scale, but that's like a nitpick. It's just like
But it's the kind of thing, if you're gonna.
unless Hulk is like 20 feet tall all of a sudden.
Well, the scale on the Hulk sometimes does seem to shift as to how tall they are. I did find the final scene to be a very obvious parallel to the scene from Hulk number one, and kind of, a matching end cap there, if you will. But it's also where they had some really good stuff in the dialogue to put a little bit of a spin on some of what they're doing with the Red Hulk. So the part I found really interesting was what they revealed about what's going to happen with one of the characters in the letter column, or the editorial page there, and which character is going to join which team. And that's got a lot of potential too. I mean, overall, I thought this closed off the storyline that started back in the first issue of Hulk fairly well. They've covered a lot of ground. They've really increased the number of Hulk characters and the viability of a few of them, and positioned, I think, all the characters, viably at the end of this. In other words, it has a decent exit strategy if pretty much all the characters that are alive at the end, they can go and do things with and are better positioned than they had been. Hulk could now go be a member of a team if they need him to be, or whatever. They haven't locked him into a, okay, now he's got to go off planet again or something stupid like that. So I felt this was a satisfying conclusion to the World War Hulk's storyline and really what's been going on in this title for the last 2 years, and I'm curious kind of what direction they're going to go in next. So obviously it's an ongoing storyline. They did leave things open, but it had enough conclusion to satisfy me.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I'm not a big fan of the whole. I mean, I liked it when Hulk was on Sakaar. That was fine. But all these Children of Hulk and Dark Hulk and, Hero, Hiro, whatever that one is called, and Scar and all that, I don't like any of that stuff. And that's just far too much. It's like, I liked this issue. And I liked World War Hulks, but I'm actually dropping the Hulk titles. because there's too many of them, and I just don't care that much about the Hulk. I mean, they've moved the Hulk into being one of these major cornerstone characters of the Marvel Universe, and I like Hulk about one book worth. But when there's, you know, two or three different Hulk books running around and miniseries all over the place continually, I think it's a great time if you're a really big Hulk fan. I'm not. You know, I like my Hulk in small doses, and I kind of feel like I don't get that. You know, it's like there's too much Hulk
Well,
for me.
and I can see that because there's a certain aspect of the Hulk that works if he's the biggest and strongest there is, and that's that. Whereas now there's half a dozen characters, actually more, when you factor in Scar and stuff like that, that are essentially, you know, the madder I get, the stronger I get, you know, woe is me sorts of varying types of woe is me, of course. And that does take away from the uniqueness of the character.
Right. I mean, you got Red Hulk, Green Hulk, you got three She-Hulks, you got A-Bomb, you
And
got
you've got
Scar.
Scar.
You know, it's
His
just.
other son doesn't seem to Hulk out yet.
Yeah.
You know, arguably you could toss Doc Samson into the mix on some of that, but I mean, even without Doc Samson, that's what seven characters right there. You know, that's enough to field its own team. And that's, I don't want to say problematic, but it definitely takes away from the uniqueness factor. Now, I will say that I read Incredible Hulk 611 right before reading this issue, and they tied off some of the stuff with Scar pretty well, pretty interestingly.
No, I read it also a couple of days ago, so same way with me. And that was my last issue of that book. I mean, I might go back to it at some point. It's just I kind of felt it was like a good tying off point, and I really don't want to be reading multiple books every month, and they just keep on going with these multiple titles for the same family of characters, as well as inserting these events and miniseries and all other kind of things around it. So if you're a kind of obsessive fan like a lot of us are, you kind of feel like, oh, well, I've got to read all these books. And I just assume say, oh, okay, well, I can either read all these books or I can read none of them. So I'm going to go the other way.
Well, and at this point, finishing off the Red Hulk storyline, tying off the whole World War Hulk stuff, they gave you an easy out. There's a sense of conclusion. If you want to get out, and clearly you do, now's a great time to do that. You know, the question is, how many people are going to be doing that? How many people are going to be coming in on the next issue of these titles? Because conceivably, they're going to be good jumping on points. And we'll find out. You know, but it's one of those things where the nature of storytelling these days is much more compartmentalized in arcs, be it trade paperback sized or multiple trade paperback sizes, this is the case, but with much clearer beginnings, middles, and ends, whereas 20, 30 years ago, it was literally the never-ending saga. Things just kept going from issue to issue to issue to issue.
Right, you just kept reading it. And you know, it's interesting because a lot of times when I drop a book, it's because I'm not liking it, right? I mean, I dropped Superman. I just didn't care for the direction Superman was going with Straczynski. This one, I'm actually liking the story. It's just Marvel's marketing of it is kind of getting on my nerves, you know, where and again, they gave me a closure point, like you said, where I can kind of drop it and not worry about it anymore.
Well, it's also a matter of titles not having a unique reason for being. You know, what is fundamentally so different about Hulk versus Incredible Hulk that you should get one and not the other? And if you should be getting both, maybe they're really the same title, you know what I mean? And they're just trying to get it out more frequently. And I feel that increasingly they're doing a bad job of coming up with titles that justify their own existence versus we're just trying to grab more money out of you.
Well, it also comes down to if you like a character or if you love a character. You know, if I like the Hulk, I want to read a title about the Hulk. If I love the Hulk, I might want to read two or three or more titles about the Hulk. You know, like you look at Spider-Man. I love Spider-Man, I don't mind reading three or four Spider-Man books a month. But if I was kind of moderately entertained by Spider-Man, there's a lot of people. It's like, I'm not going to buy three Spider-Man books a month. I don't like Spider-Man that much. You know, it's like, I like Daredevil. I don't want to read three or four Daredevil books a month. You know, it's like, I didn't get any of those Shadowland tie-ins.
Well,
I don't like the character that much, you know.
I think what we're going to start to see, if we haven't already, is as they're taking some of these things and spreading out the number of titles they go across, that's really not going to work for the publishers in the long term. But I mean, that's diving more into kind of Mayo Report territory than, you know, review stuff. But I think it's a valid point because, you know, even when people are liking titles, because there's an implied financial commitment being asked for across multiple titles by these publishers, they're losing out on the sales.
For
Go
me,
ahead.
the big draw there, or the big anti-draw, is that I know that if I read just one of the titles, they're going to be crossing over and pulling me into some crossover within 2 or 3 months.
Well,
And I
yeah,
can't just read one of the titles. You just can't do it.
because they're always trying to cross-sell, and sometimes blatantly so, sometimes subtly so. And yeah, that's both the strength and the weakness of a shared universe. You know, because it would be really weird to have these two Hulk titles going on in parallel that never tied into each other. It'd be just a little odd. It makes sense for them to have some connection, but then if they've got connection, you're only reading one, you feel a little left out. For me, this issue of Hulk was a solid 4 out of 5. I thought it was really good. Can't quite give it that 5 out of 5. I didn't think it was a perfect book. It came pretty close. But there were just enough things with characters being in there for the sake of being in there versus really adding to the story. But it was a good conclusion to the storyline, and I was pleased with it.
Yeah, I gave it a 4 out of 5 also, and I really liked the last 3 pages, you know, wrap up kind of conclusion thing. I thought it was well done. Couple of missteps along the way, but it closed off really well.
I do think they should have pared down how big they let the storyline get, got rid of a few, not done a few of those side, you know, storylines like the Hulked Out Heroes. And, because really, I don't even know that all that's played out, because aren't we getting another miniseries with Deadpool on those things, or did those already come out?
Oh, it's a good time to be a Deadpool fan. Let's just say that.
It's a good time to be a Deadpool fan with lots of discretionary income. How about that? There's just a ton
Yeah.
of Deadpool titles.
Deadpool ruined Doom War for me.
Sorry to hear that.
Well, I mean, it's like pulling that character into Doom War. It's like, why? You know, going on a digression.
On that digression, I thought it made sense because it's, oh, we need a wild card. Who's more unpredictable? It's like, okay. But it's one of those where the tone and the style of the Deadpool character in books versus the tone and style of Doom War don't
Yeah,
mesh.
exactly. It's, you know, Black Panther and the Fantastic Four don't mix with Deadpool to me. Some people are probably like, woo, more Deadpool.
I think the execution was good, but it's one of those that it could have gone really, really, really badly.
It could have been worse, I'll give you that. It was okay, but it dragged it down a little bit for me. And it was the same thing with you know, the Hulked Out Heroes part of this, you know, bringing it back to the Hulk. I mean, it was like, it could have been worse, but it just distracted and detracted from the core story.
Well, for
It
me,
wasn't a good addition.
those two-issue miniseries where it was, you know, Wolverine versus Cap or Thor versus Spider-Man, they had backup features as well with other, you know, characters paired off to face off. None of it was bad, but it was ultimately completely pointless. It's okay, let's Hulk these guys up, have them, you know, punch each other for 2 issues and, you know, show that they have, you know, unresolved issues between themselves, even if we have to create them for the sake of the story. It's like, okay, but what was added to the overall either Hulked Out or World War Hulk's storyline, or the Marvel Universe in general, or those characters in specific? So, entertaining, but again, pointless. Shall we move on to our other book?
Yes. So we've got the book Mediterranea from GG Studios. And this is the third book that's come out from GG Studios. It's an Italian comic book company that is publishing stuff that I believe was originally done in Italian or French or something in Europe, and they're translating it for the U.S. market. Now, this is also a company that if you've got a comic book shop that carries pretty much Marvel and DC and maybe a couple of Image or Dark Horse titles, that you're never going to see this book on the rack unless you ask your comic shop to order them for you. This is a brand new publisher. They're in the back half of previews. It's not something that you're necessarily going to find just tons of copies of it sitting around on the racks for you to be able to get your hands on. That said, I think that the art in all of these GG Studio books is above the bar. Really nice art. I really like the art in them. This particular one, I like the story. There was a lot of setup to it. It's funny because I read this one, and it had a lot of the. It's sort of a fantasy-ish kind of setting, not high fantasy, where you've got, you know, like dragons and stuff flying around, but more like kind of fantastical sort of fantasy, where it's not the world that we live in today, you know, kind of thing. It's not quite sci-fi either, so I don't know exactly how to classify it, but you know, it's enough where you have some of the naming things where you've got, you know, different languages and some of the interesting character and place names and words that are not standard words in whatever language it is that you're publishing it in. But it didn't bother me in this series, you know, whereas I read the one that came out from GG Studios, and I thought it was, for me, a little overdone with the fantasy terms. And at this one, there was a good mix of it.
I can see that.
But I think that, you know, this story was a little more set up than actual forward motion. And it might have benefited from, you know, sometimes when you see like a book that comes out like Radical or something, will put out a book and the first issue will be 40 or 50 pages long. And, you know, you get the setup, but then they have extra pages to actually move the plot along. Well, this might have benefited from a few more pages, but even so, I liked it. I liked it well enough, and I'm going to be continuing on with the series.
Now, I went ahead and read all three number ones from GG Studios, kind of, you know, back to back, and because I wanted to get a sense for, you know, their art style, their storytelling, and stuff across the different books. And I agree, I'm really liking the art style on all three of the titles. I think it's just a very clean, good art style, and there are places where some of it is just, you know, very stunningly done. And this was one with this title where it was really kind of hard for me to categorize it too, because it's kind of got that sword and sorcery. It's got a little of the possible either sci-fi or mystical. Definitely a bit more of a Arabian kind of a flair to it almost, versus a more Camelot, Robin Hood kind of, you know, forest fantasy sort of a bent, that the one kind of had more of that style of fantasy. And there are places here where it's clear that there was a fallen civilization of some sort that all this is taking place after. So maybe it's a far future, maybe it's not. It's hard to tell. It was a little puzzling in that respect, but in a good way. I liked the two main characters in this book. The two girls were, you know, fun to watch, both their interaction and you know, just individually. They looked too much alike. It would have been nice if they were a little easier to tell apart. But overall, while I felt this had a lot of kind of setup, we got some good action, and it definitely set the stage. As for exactly what it set the stage for, I'm still a little unclear, because again,
exactly.
it's that opening chapter, you know, but it didn't seem like it was all set up and no payoff. We got enough payoff with the action and stuff like that but it's also one where they could go in half a dozen different directions in the next issue. And I found it intriguing enough, and you know, it got me curious enough that I'm definitely, you know, sticking with this title. The one, on the other hand, was a bit more of a more straightforward fantasy storyline than I usually go for. I thought it was really well told with good art. These were things where, when I read the third title, Route de Maison Rouge, to me that clarified in my mind a lot of GG Studios, what I'm gonna currently say is almost their style or whatnot. That's a story about rival brothels. This is something that could have devolved into nothing but cheesecake and been really kind of, you know, for almost a more juvenile adult taste, if you know what I mean. But it had a solid storyline and really great art. And I got done with that issue, and I went back and counted the pages, and it's like, there's 21 pages. I'm like, no, surely this has to be like Radical did, and they put in extra pages in the first issue. Because I felt, in really all three of these issues, a lot of ground was covered. You know, each of these, I was coming in from a blank slate, never having been in these worlds, and felt like I learned a lot about these worlds and these characters, much more than I typically get out of a 21-page comic book story. So certainly I think this particular one of Mediterranean could have benefited from a second chapter, if you will, in these pages, just to further the story and completely hook us. But I felt it gave enough in here, as with the other two, to give me the flavor, the sense, and firmly establish me in that world.
Right, and you know, you draw the parallel. I mean, on Route de Maison Rouge, that one, I kind of got what the driving storyline's going to be. And it, you know, they introduced the world, they introduced the characters, they introduced the rival houses and all this, and I got a lot out of it. That was probably my favorite of the three. This one, they drew me into the world. And I'm intrigued by it, but I don't really understand what the thrust of the series is going to be yet.
But
I've been, yeah.
the difference there is with the other title, the mayor character flat out states the basic
Right.
conflict in what, the first three or four pages?
Yeah, right at the
So
beginning.
through exposition, we get what the crux of that series is about. Whereas here, there was the opportunity for that when Alanisio was talking to, you know, her mentor or whatever, and she's like, "My destination would be," and he's like, "I have no idea." Right there, he could have said, "It's going to be this. You're going to have to do this, that, and the other," and then we would have had the tone of the series, whatever. I like they didn't do that through exposition. Flip side, I too am puzzled as to what's the conflict going to be, what's the nature of the story going to be. You know, and I'm hoping that comes clear in the next few issues.
Right, and you know the thing is you know it could have been dangerous to not give you that had the world not been so fleshed out and just I think interesting. You know, it's got that Mediterranean architecture, so I mean Mediterranean, it does have a very Mediterranean feel to the architecture of the town, you know, kind of look and feel, and it's something that I'm entertained by because it's got a different enough look from everything else I'm reading that it's refreshing. And I look at it and say, yeah, I want to read more of this. You know, I want to see what's going on here.
Exactly. If this was something where we were already getting half a dozen, a dozen, two dozen titles of this basic genre and type of story, I think we would be coming out of this with a very different, gee, they didn't set it up, I've seen all this before, I'm not hooked because I'm not seeing anything that really makes it different or tells me where it's going. Whereas here, we may not know exactly where it's going. We know it's going somewhere because
It's somewhere different too. It's somewhere that's not the
Exactly.
same thing as a bunch of other things that I've already read
And we get
or
enough
am reading.
story points here to know wherever it's going, it's going to be well told. Because again, they a lot of different plot points happen from the dream sequence at the beginning, the campfire scene sets the characters up, then they get into the colony, then, you know, other stuff happens, and, you know, it's not one of these where you get, like, four scenes and boom, you're done, that's it, come back next issue, and maybe in 6 months we'll have told the first chapter. We get the full first chapter here. If somebody's looking for an uber-clear sense of direction out of this first issue, not going to get it.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, the other two titles from GG Studios, I think, did a better job in that. But again, all three, either you're going to really like the art style or you won't. Maybe, you know, different people have different tastes. But they did enough of a solid job on the art and the story in all three titles for me to have enough confidence to, you know, if I'm on the fence on a GG Studios title in the next previews, I'll give it the benefit of the doubt hands down.
Exactly. I will be trying out all of their titles. I was very entertained by this one. And I mean, even the one, I mean, it was a new and different thing. I don't think it was a bad book. It just a little distracting in parts with me. I might actually give the next issue a try. I'll flip through it at the comic shop. Now, again, I have a benefit of having this comic shop, you know, locally that actually stocks these kind of things.
Well, to me, these titles are a litmus test for just how well your comic store does on taking chances on new publishers, on unknown titles, and things of that nature. Right. Now, if they don't, that's not a bad thing about the store. It just tells you that, you know, either because of the locale they're in, the client base they've got, or whatever, they may feel the need to be more conservative, go with more known quantities, or go with stuff people have said, hey, I want this, order this for me. And that's a very wise decision for stores to do. But there are going to be a number of stores that take the chance on the GG Studios books and have them on the racks. I mean, at some point I may head over to Austin Books, which is the store here in town, most likely to have them on the racks, and see if they do.
Now, I will point out that they did go the multiple cover route on these first issues. I don't know if they're going to keep it up or not, but each of these three first issues had two different covers.
Interesting. I'm not sure I'd realized that.
They're 50-50 covers, so it's not like there's a chase cover or something.
Right, they're alternates, not incentives, but still.
Right. But again, you know, Comics, Toons, and Toys, they had enough of them that I could see, oh, well, okay, here they alternate. There's two different covers.
Yeah. For me, this was a very solid 4 out of 5. To get that 5, it would have had to give me that clear direction of where it was going. But it was, again, very solid story and art. It was a fun read, interesting world. Overall, as far as how GG Studios has launched just in general, I'd be, you know, either a 4 out of 5 for that or possibly a 5 out of 5. They've had strong solicits. They've had, you know, good delivery of material and good material that was delivered. So you know what I mean? I think, launched very smoothly.
And I'm in the same boat. 4 out of 5 on this book, and I'm really enjoying how they've been, you know, just doing their role on coming out. And they're not deluging us with titles either, which is good. You know, there's a couple going on, but, you know, some of them appear to be bi-monthly because, you know, they don't have every single issue solicited in every previews catalog. They usually only have maybe two books in any given month.
Yeah,
which is good too, because you're not a new company coming in and just stressing the wallets of your fan base. You know, someone can pick up a book or two extra maybe and try them out and see if they like them. But if, you know, you all of a sudden expand too fast and just dump, you know, 7 or 8 books on people, that could get a bit much.
Well, and that's where it's tricky to launch a new, you know, a publishing company in comics, because obviously you got to have a first title. It's got to be a reasonably strong one. In this case, I would have possibly started with, which came out first, the one or Route des Maisons Rouges?
The one came out first, followed by Route, followed by Mediterranean.
That's what I thought. I would have held off on one until a little bit later, because I think out of the three, it was the least strong. It was still very strong, but you know what I mean? Mediterranean, I think, was the right choice for like the second book and route for the first. But the trick is to have a very strong first one because that's really going to set the tone for your publishing line. And then follow it up within a couple of weeks, maybe the next week, maybe 2 weeks, with another book. Something to where if readers like it, they've got something to come back and get at the store and say, oh, I'll try that out. But not do something where it's like, okay, every week here's the title, and now every week here's two titles, and that there's so many publishers that have overgrown so fast, and haven't allowed for kind of that honeymoon period for the publisher, much less for the titles. And I'm going to be very curious to see how these books do, you know, on the sales charts. And I think it's going to take a while for GG Studios to get the penetration into the market to literally get the books on enough shelves to kind of take hold, because I certainly think they've got the quality.
Yeah, that is going to be the trick, you know, is, you know, getting them to, you know, it's really selling them to the stores, you know, because it's something where you have people, if they don't see it at the shop, they can't try it out. Now, interestingly, you know, at Comics, Toons, and Toys, I don't know, he must have got at least 10 copies of each one. Root, that was sold out the first day.
I believe that.
The one, you know, five or six copies sold the first day. Mediterranean, same. But Root sold out.
Yeah.
So, you know, I would imagine then he'd be putting in and asking for a reorder on that one and trying to get some more in. But I didn't see copy. I mean, by the time I had, that was the one that I had actually pre-ordered from DCBS, so it's actually good. I didn't go into the shop that day until later in the afternoon, and by the time I went in, there was just a placard of where it would have been sitting on the shelf. So it sold out in the first couple hours, whereas the other two books I saw on the rack.
Well, Root, I think out of the three, the covers I have in front of me at least, it's the best cover. You know, it's got a white background. That I think helps it stand out from the noise on a comic shelf. It's got a lot of beautiful ladies on it. That never hurts. And I think it communicates the basic concept of the title. Whereas you look at the one, and depending where it's racked and what it's nearby, could fall into the it's just another fantasy book, you know, kind of a thing. And Mediterranean, the cover's good, but it's just a pin-up shot. And one that doesn't really give you any sense of what the story would be about in any way, shape, or form. So I think, you know, I'm not surprised that Root, based on the concept and on the cover, was the one at that store sold out first. But again, it'll be interesting to see how the sales on the different books stack up. And, you know, how this publisher does over the long haul. Will they be able to get the material out consistently? What do they follow it up with on the other titles? And, you know, this is one that I could easily see GG Studios going out of that kind of lower tier of publishers into that middle tier in fairly short order if their business plan and ability to make that happen is as strong as their content.
Yeah, and you know, makes sense because you know, you figure, I have no knowledge of this, so I'm theorizing, but you know, it's like there's got to be lots of comics in Europe, and if they, you know, if the company in Europe publishes more than two or three titles, if they wisely take their very best ones that do the best and bring them over to the US, then that's going to give them a leg up because they've essentially already seen what the comics reading public in Europe was really taking to.
Well, and it would just make sense to launch with your strongest material first. That's
Right.
just smart. There's always the risk that the European audience and the American audience would be enough different in taste that even good stuff there wouldn't work over here for whatever reason, but.
Yeah, I think the European audience and the American audience both like beautiful ladies and you know, all this kind of stuff. So,
Again,
at
that's
least the
why I
comic
thought.
book audience, you know, it's.
Yeah, that's why I thought that would do the best, you know?
But
So.
I think that they bring you in with that, but then they don't alienate. I don't think they alienate the female readers because I don't think they take it down that really prurient path that could be just over the top, you know, just cheesecake and you know that kind of thing. They keep it a little classy.
Well, and again, that's why I saw that as kind of the benchmark title for them, because it was one that could have gone wrong in so many ways, yet they didn't focus on doing the cheesecake or anything like that. They actually had a really good story there, and they did it tastefully. You know, this is something where while the subject matter of rival brothels and stuff is adult, aside from that, content-wise, the execution of the story is something you could actually give a teenage boy and, you know, not cause people to necessarily flip out. In terms of, again, the execution of the story. Obviously, what the story is about, it's its own thing, but you know, it's the kind of thing, if that concept had been done, say, by Zenoscope, totally different book.
Yeah,
And not necessarily in a bad way.
or Avatar,
Or half a dozen other publishers. Anything else, or does that pretty much do it?
I think that's we've been with the long episode, so that's good for us today, I think.
Cool.
Join us next week when we discuss Superman Secret Origin number 6 from DC, Namor the First Mutant number 1 from Marvel, and Guarding the Globe number 1 from Image Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.